Hi, my name is Shannon Sagamani. I am 28 years old. Today's date is Thursday, June 10th, 2021. I'm located in Washington, D.C. Today, my recording partner is Jose Alfaro, and he is my colleague.
Hi everyone, my name is Jose Alfaro. I am 30 years old. Today's date is Thursday, June 10th, 2021, and I am recording with Shannon, and Shannon is my colleague.
Great. So thanks so much for agreeing to sit down with me, Jose. As you know, this is an initiative with the Office on Trafficking in Persons. We are working on an initiative called the Voices of Freedom. The voices of survivor leaders like yourself, they're so important to have at the table. So I just first and foremost just really want to thank you. To give listeners a little context of why we're meeting today, in recognition of the 20-year anniversary of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000, or TVPA, the initiative will chronicle the impact of this piece of legislation by preserving the stories of survivors, service providers, and other professionals, and just really get your perspective on the anti-trafficking field and give you a chance to share your story. So again, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Great. So to give listeners a little background, I'll kind of just start. I am a trafficking program specialist with the Office on Trafficking in Persons. I have a background in social work, so I have experience, working directly with trafficking survivors, as well as community violence, youth in the child welfare system, a little bit of everything. And so I just kind of wanted to get to know you, Jose, get to know your background, and kind of as we begin our conversation, I wanted to know if there's anything you want listeners to know about you as you kind of share your story and answer these questions.
Yes, absolutely. I think the number one thing that I would like for people to know about me as we get started is that I'm human. And I never in a million years thought that something like this would happen to me. But also, I am in a place in my life where I finally feel like I'm getting to be the person that I was before it all happened to me. And so now that I'm able to analyze everything, I've realized that this is an ongoing issue in the world, but especially within the LGBTQ community. And if I can be a voice for those that are unheard or can't even identify, then that's what I'm going to do.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. And that does kind of like lead me in nicely to my next question, which is really like, how do you think your life experiences and what you went through contributed to your advocacy work today for the LGBTQ community?
Well, I think that how it has contributed to the work that I do today. My entire story has everything to do with why I speak out. I feel that there's so much stigma around males coming forward and sharing about sexual abuse or sexual exploitation. And so, because I found it so hard for myself to identify and for myself to come forward and share, but also when I did share and the negative comments and the things people would say to me, I felt it was even more of a reason for me to speak out and share more. So again, more people can identify and feel comfortable coming forward if they do. So because of that, that's kind of where I decided that I need to share my story on as many platforms as possible, so that I can be heard, but also I can be heard by other survivors or victims.
No, that really takes a lot of courage, especially like you said, when people were giving you so much backlash for sharing your story. And I know how much courage that takes. So, thank you for really being that voice for other survivors. Are you comfortable sharing just a little bit about your story?
Absolutely. So my story begins in 2006 when my parents kicked me out of my home because of my sexuality. I grew up in a very conservative town where being gay was considered an abomination. I was silenced at a very young age. You know, I was terrified. I couldn't come forward. I couldn't share with anyone what I was going through or what I was feeling because I was afraid of going to hell or feeling like everyone was going to shun me, which eventually did happen. At this time in my life, I was an honor roll student. I was participating in almost every club that I could. Mm-hmm. I played many sports and I was prepared for a college career. And when my parents went through my phone and realized that I was gay, they asked me how they were going to fix me. And at this time in my life, I felt like I needed to be fixed, like I wanted to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And I was willing to do anything and everything that I could. But at the same time, I didn't know what to do. So for them to ask me, my answer was simply just move me somewhere new where I can start all over. Mm-hmm. And they did. And when they moved me somewhere new, I ended up meeting a 36-year-old man who began sexually abusing me. And sex became normal. And I felt as though I owed this man, you know, anything that he wanted in return of him supporting me and helping me. And when I went back home that summer, my father gave me an ultimatum. And he said, either you are going to conversion therapy camp and you're going to church and you're going to go to therapy and you're going to get fixed, or you can get out of my house. And I don't believe that my father thought that I had anywhere else to go. And so I think he thought that this was going to be my only option. Mm-hmm. But because I was talking to this older man, I decided I was going to go with him. And I did. And I moved in with him. And again, he began sexually abusing me several times a day, every day for several months. And then I realized that he was sleeping with other teenagers. And it was one thing for it to be happening to me, but it was another to see and hear that it was happening to other teenagers. And so I left and I went back home. And that is when my father kicked me out after a week of being home. I went to a friend's place. I went online and I came in contact with a man named Jason Gandy. And Jason Gandy was very empathetic. He asked me how my day was going. I was completely honest with him. I was looking for support. I was looking for help. I was looking for advice. And he seemed to paint this picture of the most incredible life that was waiting for me. Mm-hmm. And he told me he had a 9-bedroom home in Austin, Texas. He told me that he sold a pressure washer business at the age of 15 and made millions off of it. And he's saying these things to me and all I can think is, wow, like this is what I need. I need someone to help me. And he has it all. And he told me that he had friends who went through similar situations and that he wanted to help me out. And that was, I became the perfect victim for him in that moment. And I do believe that he was online searching for a person of color, someone who looked extremely young, knowing that this young person would listen and do anything that he asked. And it was just perfect timing. And so after a couple of hours of talking with him, I contemplated, I went back and forth, should I go, should I not? And eventually I realized I have nowhere else to go. I have no one to come to and ask for advice. So I'm just going to do it. And I did. And the first week things were normal, I guess. I mean, we went to restaurants, we hung out. Then he began controlling me, changing my diet, changing how many times a day I went to the gym. And from there, he then introduced the idea of me working for him. And he mentioned that he had a massage business that he ran on the side for extra money. And he said, one day you're going to want to live a life on your own. and you're going to want to support yourself. And at the age of 16, this is all I ever wanted. I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to be able to support myself, but I also wanted to live the life that I felt comfortable living. I wanted to be myself without anyone stopping me or telling me that I was wrong. And this is exactly what I wanted to hear. And he knew that. And so he said, I want to include you in my massage business, but there's one problem. You're not 18 years old. And he said, if anyone asks, you have to lie. And he says, if they find out that you're under the age of 18, you're going to get into a lot of trouble. So immediately, I am now silenced. I cannot go to anyone and share any of the things that are about to occur. And if I do, then I'm running the risk of getting in trouble, going to jail, or people judging me. Mm-hmm. And so I told him that there was one other issue, that I didn't know how to give a massage. And he said, that's the easy part. And I said, cool, how do we get started? And he began taking shirtless photos of me, posting them online. And he showed me how to make Craigslist ads and how to respond to the emails and how to make sure that law enforcement wasn't the people that we were talking to. And then it came to our first massage and the door was locked. It was closed. I'm in a room with two adult men who are completely naked. And I realized in that moment, this is not a massage. This is going to be sexual. And again, I'm not chained. I'm not tied down. I'm simply mentally manipulated. And I now know there's no way out of this. And if I choose to say no, or if I walk out of this door, one, where am I going to go? Two, is this man going to stop me with fear that I'm going to tell law enforcement or tell someone else what he did? Or three, is Jason going to stop me and then harm me and feel as though he can no longer trust me? Mm-hmm. And so I'm trapped and there was no way out. And as time went on, the massages began to get more and more aggressive. They went from fondling to oral sex to full on rape. And after a while, I couldn't take it anymore. And it was something that I never in a million years thought that I would be doing. Like I said, I had dreams, I had goals, there were things that I wanted to do, and never did I think that I would be doing sex work. And so I ended up contacting the 36-year-old, and I felt that that was going to be a better option for me, and I planned my escape. And I think the biggest question that I get the most is, why didn't you just leave? Or why didn't you leave sooner? And I think the best answer that I can give is that I had nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who to turn to, who to talk to. I didn't know that there were resources out there that could help me. And to be quite honest with you, at that time in 2006 or 2007, I don't even know if there were resources out there for me. And so basically, I was just lost and I needed guidance, and there was nowhere out there. There was no one out there to help guide me. But that is the majority of my story. I think after that, it just becomes survival. You know, how do I move forward with my life? What is happening to me? I became so lost, so confused, and I felt so misunderstood. You know, I began drinking and partying and taking drugs and finding ways to numb myself without even realizing that what I was doing was numbing myself. And I became toxic. You know, people around me would say, don't hang out with him. He's crazy. He's wild. He acts out constantly. My family would say he's disobedient. He doesn't listen. He's he's not a good kid. And you hear these things, but you don't understand why you've become this person without someone telling you, like, what you experienced is traumatizing and it's going to affect you for the rest of your life, and you need help, you need therapy, you need to take care of yourself. And instead, I was causing more harm. I was burning bridges. I was taking drugs. I was drinking constantly. I didn't care about life. I didn't care about my future. All I cared about was surviving and partying. And that's what I did. And so it led me to a life of sex work, where sex work gave me the option to continue the partying, but also provide for myself. Mm-hmm. And because I couldn't hold a job, I didn't wake up on time. I missed my alarm several times. I had to drop out of college. And so it allowed me to have the lifestyle that I wanted and that I needed at that time. And the sex work ended up leading me to webcam, to then being online and getting into the sugar daddy, sugar baby relationship, which then led me to a man flying me to Boston, Massachusetts, where I currently live. And things just weren't working out between us. And he said, "You're a great guy. I'd like to offer you a place to stay rent free with food on the table under one condition." And I said, "Here we go. What is it that you want me to do for you?" And he said, "You've got to go back to school." Which at that time, someone would say that's a blessing in disguise, but I was like, no, that's the last thing that I want to do. This is an easy life. I have luxury clothes. I have all the money that I could ask for. I don't want to go back to school. And he said, "Well, then you can go back to Texas." And I'm like, well, that's not happening. So I enrolled into beauty school, and then I got my first real job and a real paycheck. And I say a real paycheck, but the paycheck was like $500. But for me at that time, it was everything. Mm-hmm. And I started to feel again like I was that young, thriving, you know, hungry young man again. And I fed off of that. And I'm so happy that I did, because I started to slowly realized that I needed to get my shit together. And I did. I started to get my life together, for sure.
That is absolutely amazing, Jose. You know, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. There are certain parts of your story that I just kind of want to highlight. I mean, thank you for sharing that, you know, you were not chained down. I think that is particularly important, because I think a lot of people who do not understand how exploitation works, they don't understand how the psychological control and that manipulation and kind of feeding off of the vulnerabilities that you had at that time can definitely be more powerful and more controlling than actual physical control. And so I think it's so important that people are able to hear your perspective. I also, you know, think it's so important that despite everything that you went through, you were able to, you know, go back to school, and, you know, you are feeling more like yourself now, like you mentioned. And it does kind of lead me into my next question, because you were obviously very resilient. So just kind of, how would you define resilience? You know, what has been the sources of resilience in your life? I hear going back to school was one of them. But would you mind sharing a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. And it's, for me, that question is very broad. But if I could describe resiliency, it would be to keep going. Mm-hmm. no matter what obstacles come your way, just to be able to keep going. And to be honest with you, there were a lot of factors that kept me going. And it was, one, growing up, and rarely do I actually talk about the positives of my parents, but mm-hmm. my parents instilled in me great work ethic, to always work hard and to always want to do better. And with that, I carried that with me. And I think that's something that always kept me going. You know, when Jason did what he did to me and this 36-year-old is sexually abusing me, you'd think that there's nowhere else to go, but I continued high school. I got my diploma. I graduated. But there was always something in me that said, you've got to set yourself up for success in the future. And there were many ways that I did that, even though some of them were not maybe the right way. But I mean, I even see the sex work as something that set myself up for my own future. Because I easily could have just fallen into drugs and given up and said, I'm not going to do anything, and then been homeless and not cared. But there was a part of me that always cared and always wanted to keep going. And even though sex work might be frowned upon to some people, for me, it helped me to continue to live and to survive and to keep going. Mm-hmm. And so for me, resiliency just means to keep fighting and to keep going no matter what.
Yeah. And you certainly did that. And it sounds like you continue to do that, even just by sharing your story. You know, I think that is educating so many people. And, you know, I'm sure there are people that are going to listen to your story or that have listened to your story that can now identify as a survivor and as someone and they look at you for inspiration. You know, you mentioned being kind of an advocate for the LGBTQ community and survivors who identify as male. Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you have done or that you want to do for that community?
So the work that I've done is mostly just sharing my story like I am today, to be honest with you. I think, like I said, it's so important that we hear all survivor voices, people of color, LGBTQ. I am dying to hear a story of a trans survivor. But I think the work that I have been doing and sharing my story, I've had so many people reach out to me and tell me that either they can relate or they've been through a similar experience or they didn't realize that males were trafficked. I mean, the list goes on things that people have shared with me or said to me or told me. And I think that one thing that has really affected the work that I do is I was giving a speech. I was just sharing my story with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I was in contact with so many law enforcement officers that were there that day, FBI, Homeland Security, social workers. And I'm sharing my story, and I explain everything that I went through, and this woman came up to me afterward and she said, Jose, I'm a mother of three young men. And she said, I also grew up in a very small town, very close to yours. And she shared the name of it. And I was like, oh, I know where that is. You know, that's very, very close. And she says, I want you to know first and foremost that I am a Christian woman. And I kind of took a step back and I was just like, okay, like, what does your religion or anything have to do with any of this? But she continued and she said, I began listening to your story and I immediately was kind of turned off by it. And she said, and I'm not going to lie to you, I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And she said, and then you continued to share your story and I started thinking about the three young men that I raised. And she said, never in a million years would I ever wish that for one of my children. And she said, and I now can say to you that you have changed my perspective. And I realize that you are human and you are worthy of love. You are worthy of support. And I'm sorry that I was so turned off at the beginning. She said, but the work that you're doing has changed my views, and thank you so much for being here. And at the time, I didn't really take that as a positive. I was just kind of still stuck on the fact that she came up to me admitting that she's a Christian woman, almost as if like she was again shunning me and doing exactly what my parents did. But now that I think about that, it is the one thing that has stuck with me for 5 years now. And I think back to her, and that is the reason why I do what I do today. You know, it's not just for survivors to identify, but it's also for parents, for other people to realize that every human is deserving of love and support. And this type of human trafficking should not happen to anyone. It doesn't matter your race. It doesn't matter your gender. It doesn't matter your sexual orientation. What matters is that you're human. And like I said, you're deserving of life and love and support, and have the opportunity to become anything and everything that you want to do in life. But yeah, I hope that kind of answers your question.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I think, Jose, it's so clear that just by, you know, not even just, but by sharing your story, it's huge. And it's made such an impact on, like you said, all different types of people. And I think it is clear that it's having a ripple effect, because now that you have educated her, who knows who she then went to educate, right? Her family, her friends, her church members. So I think that is absolutely amazing, and you're doing fantastic work. You know, it again leads me to my next question. Do you have, you know, based on your experience, based on telling your story, the people that you've met, do you have any advice for people who are wishing to make a difference for human trafficking survivors?
Absolutely. And there's a number of things that I would like to say for those who want to advocate or work in the field against human trafficking. My suggestion is, one, if you are a survivor, I hope that you are getting therapy, you're getting the help that you need, so that you are prepared for what's to come. Because when you share, it's going to open up a lot of old memories and a lot of things that you've suppressed, and you have no clue what dark world you may enter. And I can say for myself, when I first shared, and especially with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the first time I shared, the next morning, well, that night, I partied so hard and I blacked out. And I woke up the next morning and I contemplated suicide, you know, and here I am almost over a decade out of what happened to me. I also testified in a trial against Jason, the guy who trafficked me. Mm-hmm. And you think that, oh, Jose, you've gotten, you know, the validation that you need to move on with your life. But here I am in my hotel room ready to commit suicide. And that was a moment where I realized, hold up, maybe I should slow things down, and maybe I need to get a little more help and have a little more healing before I continue to share. But I will say there is a positive. Once I began to share more and more, I began writing my book. I began, you know, talking with friends and family and getting all of the positive messages. I slowly started to realize how much easier it was becoming for me. So my suggestion is just to make sure that you are prepared and that you're ready to share your story. And then for those who are not survivors and are just looking to help, I suggest you look into organizations that are survivor-led. I think it's so important. But also, when we are sharing about survivors, we share about all survivors. And I think one thing that I hear the most is about women and children. It would be nice to include men and males in the dialogue when we're talking about that, so that we can help break that stigma and more males can identify and come forward and share and feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I, you know, I really appreciate your honesty about the effects that survivors continue to face even long after their experience. It's so important. And I agree, we really do need to break that stigma. Would you like to talk a little bit about your book? I'd love to hear a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. So I've been writing for, I want to say it's going on 4 years now. It was right after the trial that I made the decision to begin writing. Mm-hmm. And I started from the beginning. I started with my childhood, and I began analyzing every part of my life, because I asked myself, how did I end up here today? How did I go from having so much drive and wanting to become so successful in life to then becoming or doing sex work and being at my lowest low, and then going through anxiety, PTSD, having a 2-week anxiety attack or a panic attack where I then became bedridden for 2 weeks. How did I end up in this place? And why am I not that fun, loving, excited young man that I once was? Mm-hmm. And I began writing for myself. I began writing so that I could analyze everything and have a better understanding. And then one page turned into 100 pages, and then 100 pages turned into, you know, several chapters, and then several chapters turned into an entire book. And right now I'm still going through the editing process, but eventually I do plan on publishing my book. I want to go the traditional route, but at the end of the day, if that doesn't work out for me, then I will self-publish. Either way, I put a lot of work into it, put a lot of heart, a lot of sweat, and so it will get released somehow, one way or another.
That's great. Yeah, definitely, you know, keep me in the loop. I would love to, once it's published, love to buy a copy and read it. You know, I can tell that you have put a lot of work into it.
No, I definitely will. And if I don't, then I'm sure I'll be sharing it everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll find out one way or the other, and then I'd be happy to spread the word as well.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Jose, we are kind of, you know, getting close to the end, so I definitely wanted to end on kind of a positive note. You know, I'm really interested in knowing how you would like to be remembered, whether that's the legacy that you leave for your family, your community, your friends, the anti-trafficking world, any of those.
I think the way that I would like to be remembered is as a fun, loving, driven person, but also I want to feel, like people understand that I am human. And the things that I've done and the things that I've participated in and the years of my toxic behavior and the people that I've, you know, come in contact with, I hope that people can forgive me and they can look past that and they can see what I was struggling with. And in the future, if they come in contact with someone who's, you know, showing the exact type of behavior, I hope that they can remember me and say, this person is a human being and they might have gone through something horrible and I should not judge them. But if anything, I should probably support and help them with whatever it is that they are struggling with. So I think that I kind of answered that question, but I think that's one major thing that I hope people know about me, is that I have done things that are horrible, and I've also had things that are horrible that have been done to me. But mm-hmm. again, I'm human and I am worthy of love. And it took me a long time to realize that, but I'm finally here. And I want to leave people with that, that all human beings are deserving of that. So. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I have known you for a very, very, very short time. And I can, you know, already tell that you are a fun, loving and driven person, and you really are making an impact on so many different lives. So I really can't thank you enough for sharing your story and being so open and making that impact on survivors everywhere. You know, Jose, it's really, really been an honor to have the opportunity to interview you and get to know you a little bit more. And so I just want to say thank you again.
Thank you for allowing me to be on your platform. Thank you to StoryCorps for having me as well. I think this is incredible work. And like I said, the more we raise the voices of those that are being unheard, the more people that we're going to help and save. So I appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. As we close, is there anything else that you want to share with anyone?
Parents, love your children.
Absolutely.
Love your children. Yeah. Yep. That's it.
Yeah. No, that's very important. So thank you for sharing. Okay, great. Well, thanks again, Jose. It was great talking to you today.